Lightspeed Venture Partners presents Tomorrow Built Today. You can find details from this episode and more at tbtpodcast.com.
Hello, Lightspeed listeners. Today we are sitting down with Lightspeed's entrepreneur in residence, Tara Nicole Nelson. So we first met Tara after reading her excellent post on how to do content marketing right. Now, Tara actually learned these best practices while running marketing for MyFitnessPal. While at MyFitnessPal, she more than doubled their users to 100 million and drove a 25% increase in their user engagement, which ultimately led to the company being sold for 475 million to Under Armour. Tara continued to run marketing for Under Armour Connected Fitness before taking the experience that she has developed to start her own consulting company and her recent book, The Transformational Consumer. Tara has also created brand, growth, media, and content strategies for brands like HGTV, Trulia, ING Direct, Lookout Mobile Security, Chegg, Eventbrite, and many others. So in short, no one knows consumer behavior like Tara, and we're very excited to have her on our team here at Lightspeed. So Tara, it's over to you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Super fun.
So I'd love to first start by talking a little bit about your background in content marketing, and then hear what you're currently working on. So with that, what are some of the biggest and most common mistakes you see in content marketing today?
I think the biggest mistake, and it's pretty universal, I see it all the time, is people focusing on driving growth, like sheer numbers of clicks or views or visitors, over creating and producing content in a way that drives engagement. I say often, you can buy growth, you can actually get people to your site or your blog or your video or whatever with paid. You can't buy engagement, though. You have to build that over time. And that's really kind of the premise of the work that I've done at all of the companies that you've mentioned, and the work that, you know, the book actually is the only way to really build long-term customer engagement and loyalty and love for your content, which is the same as love for your brand, is to make sure that what you're doing serves their undying human aspirations to live better lives. And if you do that, growth actually will take care of itself.
Wow. Undying human aspirations to lead a better life.
No big deal. Just fix the world and people's lives.
This is why we love Tara. Thinking very big over here. And another area where you thought very big is in your role as an author. So in your book, The Transformational Consumer, you advise entrepreneurs to shift focus from simply making products to actually solving customers' problems. So can you talk a little bit about that and what it means to you to serve a transformational consumer?
Well, there's two sort of separate things here. One is like what the transformational consumer is. So through my work, actually starting around the time that I was working at Trulia, and then, you know, I left there and worked at a consumer tech PR agency. This was a time at which everyone said, email is dead. Nobody cares about email anymore. Email marketing doesn't work. You have to do all this other stuff. But we were sending tens of millions of people on a weekly basis to these sites with email, but our emails were different. They were not really promoting us and promoting our brand and what we did. They were really, really focused on removing frictions and triggering progress along our customers' real world, real life journeys to solve the problem that we as a company existed to solve. We thought about the problems we were solving really differently, right? So Trulia is essentially a real estate search engine, but internally in that time, we were constantly talking and thinking about what we did as solving the problem of helping people make the wisest possible decision on the biggest purchase they'll ever make. So if you can zoom out on your customers, like the problem you're trying to solve is not get people to buy what you sell. That is not the problem you're trying to solve. If you can zoom out and begin to really get thoughtful about and understand the real world, real life problem that your customer is trying to solve, and literally the book talks through my personal approach to defining and mapping that question out very, very vividly. Your customers, like the stages and phases that your customer goes through as they're trying to solve the problem, the things that get them stuck, the points of resistance they hit, the things that trigger progress, the questions they ask along the way, and where they go to ask those questions. If you take a deep dive into understanding your customer's problem like that, you cannot not surface and spot all these opportunities for your business to pull friction out of the way, to trigger progress along the way. It also is just fun. So Let's not forget that. Like, the older I get, the more I'm like, I'm going to be like the person who reminds us all that we're in business in part to have fun, to create things that like help change people's lives. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about like culture and recruiting and, you know, inclusion and all of these things. When you build a company that is focused deeply on serving a customer and removing, you know, removing problems from their lives, a lot of people want to work on it because it's just more fun. You know, and it's certainly more fun than a lot of the opposite approach, which is like super product first or super me too, you know, innovation because somebody else did that. We're going to do that and tweak it this little way. That's much less fun to work on than, hey, team, here's our customers. Here's their real lives. Here's their problem. Where can we pull friction out?
I love the mention of the word fun there because another sort of member of the Lightspeed family is Max Levchin from Affirm. And in his fund, he actually calls it HVF,
right.
Hard, valuable, fun.
Yes.
And it's so important. That's exactly what a business needs to be.
Right. Both for on the consumer side and on the internal side. I think the more, you know, I've worked at two in-house, I've worked at two incredible sort of startups from early stage startup almost to or through acquisition. And I think for both of those companies had a very unusual for this for the Valley, I think, deeply loyal, maybe overly devoted employees. All of us were like reeling and trying to figure out what to do, like after these places weren't, you know, moved into their next season of their careers. It is one thing, the effort to create a company that thrives and to serve your customers in a way that helps them thrive is actually like one big holistic endeavor. And it's like fun on the inside and fun. And customers care about that stuff. Customers have, I say, like the most finely honed BS detector. 2017 customers are like calling BS. That doesn't work. That's not cool. I'll use it once. You can get someone to use it once, but you won't get them to use it over and over and over again, which is that is the lifeblood of a business, right? Not just growth, but growth of engaged customers. Mm. So that's like, you know, kind of full circle to your first question. When I talk to companies about their content marketing, I really discourage, you know, at the very beginning of a content program, you need to have output metrics. You need to like just keep your team accountable to what they're supposed to be creating, some basic message pillars, that kind of thing. But over time, like those metrics should be shifting from just like how many eyeballs were on this to like how many people keep coming back? How much time are they spending watching these things? Is there a journey where they progress from just watching your thing to, you know, more deeply engaging with your product? Are they sharing it with other people? And those things actually also do all kinds of magic in your metrics in terms of like the cost of acquiring customers and their lifetime value. So,
You talk a lot about the problems that customers have. And this is something that I know that you really feel to the point that you actually decided to go out there and do a tour speaking to people about the great things going on in their lives, but also their problems.
Yes.
So I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about exactly what you've been up to recently with the Soul Tour.
It has come to seem to me to be the most natural, most organic step in evolution in my career. But it seemed weird at first, so let me give you the context on that. The idea of a transformational consumer is a person who sees all of life as a series of behavior change projects to get healthier, wealthier, and wiser. That is the customer that I have studied my whole career. That's all I've ever cared about working on. And what I realized, in part through some of our early conversations with me and you guys here at Lightspeed, was that a lot of my career had essentially been me really trying to answer people's deep soul level SOSs through the sort of somewhat superficial means of like weight loss and personal finance. You know what I mean? These are symptoms of like soul level breakdowns. And once you get in there and start talking with people about them, all this deeper stuff comes up. So I had kind of been using my marketing work to slip people really secret covert messages about how incredible they are and their deep worthiness and their, you know, how much they should love themselves, how much they are loved. Once we decided, you know, hey, there's probably something in that deeper space that I've been trying to work on or wanting to work on that I should be working on, I thought, what do I do first? I know what to do first. Every company I've ever worked with, I told they needed to understand their customer's problem more deeply than they did. So I'm going to go out and understand the customer's problems more deeply. So I started this thing called Soul Tour, where I went to a bunch of cities. I did a bunch of video interviews, and I just started talking with people about how they, what they do to take care of their souls, what soul and spirit mean to them, what that looks like to them, what happens when it breaks down, what they believe in, what they don't believe in, their traumas with, you know, institutions and teachers, spiritual leaders, religious leaders, and what's really working for them. I had a bunch of surprises. One is, you know, we live in the valley where there's not a lot of talk about soul and spirit. It's just a realm people don't either believe in or touch on. It's certainly not publicly discussed almost ever. I often tell people in other consumer tech companies to get out of San Francisco when they're talking, trying to solve a consumer problem, because it is true that it is not as verboten socially in other places to have these conversations. But there are still trends that we are perhaps on the extreme end of, like the trend toward identifying as spiritual but not religious. We're seeing like a huge decline in the numbers of people who identify with specific religious affiliations. But even those who don't still often look at themselves as having kind of rich spiritual practices. And those practices can include everything from going to yoga and going to CrossFit, going to spin class and feeling like your teacher inspires you, you know, things that take care of your body. Body is like one of the things that I identified as like a gateway to deeper soulful living. People start down that path of either, you know, self-acceptance of their body or weight loss, or they have a health problem and it sort of triggers them into deeper levels of inquiry about their souls. Another is livelihood. So I heard time after time person talking about how, you know, they're at work and they have this crisis where they realize they're just working to make a big company more money that already has a bunch of money, even more money, and they don't think that's all their life is about. They believe there's something bigger than they're out there for them, and so they seek, you know, to start to care for their souls and learn, find meaning and purpose, inspired in part by this like kind of crisis of ennui or disengagement at work. I heard everything from the very common sentiment that certain social media sites are taking over and ruining people's lives. This came up a lot, you know, in the wake of the election. We had people say flat out, I built my own wall. I unfriended almost everyone I know.
Wow.
The world seems crazy. Things seem like they're going bad fast. And then we heard a lot the opposite, like what is working for people? People are putting together their own dinner supper clubs, badass brunches we heard about, you know, just people connecting with other people in non-institutional ways. They're reading books a lot still, reading and listening to, but also reading. Writing is a spiritual practice that's gotten to be very popular. The concept of morning pages and just free writing as part of your everyday. And so it's interesting because the way I've started to think about this in my own mind is like, yes, our country in particular is getting much less religious, but it's getting much more spiritual. Mm. People are curious and they have a lot of wonder about the universe and their place in it. They want to both care for their own sort of soul and spirit, but also connect with each other. They don't see caretaking the soul as limited to Sunday anymore. It's something they want to do all day, every day, on their devices, in the bed, before they get up, before they go to sleep, and at all points in between. So in some ways, I think the stage has been set for like a resurgence of soul and spirit in this time that seems pretty devoid of it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I personally would like consider myself a spiritual person, but I'm also quite religious. So I go to church most Sundays. Hey, yeah. you and I
went
to church together.
It was pretty great.
But it's definitely something in Silicon Valley that people don't talk about. Yeah. Why do you think that we don't talk about it so much here?
I think there are a bunch of things. I think there a number of people have what I call church PTSD, which is they are traumatized from having either personally been judged or seen harsh judgment or something that was just wildly discordant with their own value system be labeled church or God. So that's one thing. Two, I do think there is this a little bit of a false dichotomy that's been set up between like science and technology and soul and spirit. Because there aren't many people vocally out there modeling that you can both cultivate spiritual well-being and be a technologist. I think the longer that goes on, the more and more they seem like they don't go together. And so that's actually like a big just personal life priority for me. And it's key to like what I've seen work with other transformational consumer segments and what I think will work in the future. You can't just tell people what to do. They need models for it. MyFitnessPal, we did a deep program around user success stories. So it's not us just telling people like, should like count your calories or whatever, but them actually seeing like a real person just like them who doesn't seem like, you know, a crazy super athlete, you know, someone just like them actually had this process and this experience, and that makes it feel like doable or relatable. I think we don't have a lot of models for that here. And I think that's important.
Yeah.
I think, you know, modeling well-being is important.
This is something that from a religious perspective and especially a spiritual perspective, I'm excited to see what you're going to be bringing us here.
Yeah. And again, keyword fun.
Absolutely.
Right? Keyword fun. Like, I think, you know, I only work on things that make people's lives better. So if we can do that and have some fun too, I think we'll be in good shape.
And the other keyword for me is authenticity. And no one has more authenticity than you here. So it's so great to see.
Thanks. This is an open invite to go to church to anyone who
wants. All Lightspeed listeners
and
are invited.
Or to the Zen Center because that's my jam.
So just going back to your soul tour, it's been a very long time since we've seen this division between states and the differences of opinions out there in this country. So I'd love to just hear a little bit more about the takeaways from your research and even how different the stories were between states.
What I've seen is people in general moving away from the institutional practice of religion. Yes, you see, there are certainly geographies where it's much more common to see an average person go to church than not. But even in those places, people are tending to like create personalized practices. And that's like really a lot what I was kind of trying to dive into was like, what do you do? And people would tell me about this like book club they've been in for 5 years studying some like religious text with these people. And this one woman who taught a class like that she had taught one book for 10 years and she's in her 60s. So she was telling me about the book that she plans to teach to the end of her life. And
wow.
Who will teach it after that? Who will teach the class after that? You know, there definitely can be and are very real geographical divisions and differences. But what I thought was beautiful and surprising to me was how many people don't even think of their spirituality as an institutional or even large group thing necessarily. A lot of people just shared, I don't know, I meet with these people for that and these people for that, and I read this and I study that, and I, you know what I mean? And they do, like, people do definitely go to church. Not only around their religious beliefs, a lot of people go to church for like just community reasons, actually, right? Like there's a community of parents there who kind of sort of mostly live like you do. There's a business community at their church. I just gave a talk at my church's business conference a couple weekends ago. So that, I guess, is one of the other things is how there is a big geographic difference, I think, in how people organize their lives around their spiritual or religious communities. But it's not like black and white. So maybe if you're in the South, you're probably more likely to be going to church on Sunday and to have a fair amount of your community events built into church. But if you're in San Francisco, you probably have a fair amount of your life built around your yoga studio or your, you know what I mean, your meditation class or your lots of things that people did. I mean, art, I heard about art and music a lot. People saying that they create, like they play music or listen to music in part as part of their spiritual experience. So it's really like different flavors and it looks different in different places more than it being a thing in one place and not in the other place, I guess is the way I'd say that.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And for me, whether it's your soul tour, or whether it's the transformational consumer, I just love all of the insights that you bring us and feel like there's going to be a lot more content coming this way.
Oh, yeah.
So watch this space, Lightspeed listeners. Gitara, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
We're so happy that you're part of the Lightspeed family. So looking forward to doing lots more together.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
This podcast is produced by Lightspeed Venture Partners. For more details on this episode, head over to tbtpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.